helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. What bothers you more? The amount of censorship or the lack of any meaningful response to it? For me, it's the lack of response. I expect people who are drawn to power to do anything to protect it, but to have the American people so comfortable with it that they just accept it really disturbs me. How many wars have we fought? How many have bled and died to protect our rights to freedom of speech and of the press? Have we become so comfortable with the chains that we wear, like a dog chained too long in the backyard, we won't even bark when the thief breaks in? I'm not just talking about government censorship, that's bad enough, but societal censorship as well. Schools, businesses, even our neighbors are trying to keep us quiet while those who espouse pedophilia, racism, and intolerance are extolled. I think it's enough to make our founding fathers cry. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today as we take a look at censorship in all of its ugly forms. You know, it's interesting. I've seen this coming. This isn't a new phenomenon. People who think this censorship is brand new, it's something that's only happened in the last few years, they've been ignorant of their history. Who is a Santayana that said, those who refuse to learn from history are doomed to repeat it? I remember when political correctness first rose its ugly head. The idea is that you had to censor yourself because, well, certain words were just, well, they were just too evil, too mean to be spoken in public. Now, there's always been societal pressure upon language. I'm old enough to remember when the use of, you know, certain foul words was just anathema to those to polite society. The F-bomb was truly a bomb. Today it's passé. People don't even seem to think much about it anymore. But we're going beyond that because now we're not simply saying as a society we don't like certain words. We're going beyond that to the point where we're not allowed certain ideas. And I think, like so many things, it started off as a reasonable idea. We hated the idea of racism, the denigrating people by calling them certain names. And we started as a society to say, no, those names are not acceptable. Whether it be the N-word or the C-word or pick any one of a list of names, we decided, nope, those are not acceptable. And I think as a society, we would agree that, yeah, you know, there are certain things. It's not right to denigrate people because of the color of their skin or because of their sex or simply because of their heritage. Let's face it, every race, every heritage, every nationality has vulgar words that are used to describe them. But you see, it's gone farther than that. I find it interesting that those who spent the most time in the 60s and 70s promoting free speech are now about censored speech. See, they've decided it's not enough to simply say, no, you can't call black people by a certain name or Hispanics or Asians or Jews, that you had to treat them a little more respect, to the point now where you're not allowed to disagree with an election if a certain political party wins. You're not allowed to disagree with the government about certain diseases or certain treatments. You're not even allowed to disagree with facts and data because that needs to be censored out. What we call the censorship industrial complex is little more than politically correct run amok. In fact, much of woke is little more than political correctness run amok. Because rather than saying this is a good idea, like, so, you know, think about it. How many things are good for you in certain quantities, but too much of it is dangerous. Take a couple aspirin, it'll cure your headache. Take a handful of aspirin, it can kill you. Drink a glass of water, that's good for you. Drink a few gallons of water and you can die from water poisoning. I think the problem we're dealing with is liberty has been poisoned by our lack of restraint when it comes to what ideas we're going to censor, what ideas we're not going to allow. And I think the problem comes from we thought we could get rid of bad ideas by censoring them, forgetting that what exists in the human heart doesn't disappear simply because the words aren't spoken in public. Well, take, for example, social media. The whole idea behind social media was to encourage interaction, encourage the societal exchange of information. Everything from just to avoid those harmful stereotypes to the simple exchange of good ideas. Now, social media has become some of the most toxic spaces on the internet. I can pretty much tell based on the content of one of these episodes or one of the articles I write or one of the videos I do, I can pretty much tell the reaction I'm going to get. And it's interesting what ideas will become toxic. And it always seems to be from social media. But it's not simply the idea of there are, you know, the mean evil. I mean, they don't discuss it. They don't challenge what I say. They don't provide evidence to the contrary of my assertions. They simply decide they can call me names and walk away like a spoiled brat. But now the very idea of spreading factual information. I've said before, you know, while Facebook refused to tell me why they locked me out, why they suspended me from my account permanently, why they wouldn't even let me create a new account under a different email address. They never exactly told me why, but I can pretty much guess. I mean, at that time, the most controversial thing I was doing was, teaching people what the Constitution actually says about how we elect a president. I was teaching based on the Constitution, laws of the United States, the actual process we go through to elect a president. And for that, I've been censored. And again, that was in 2020, 2.5 years. Now we find out that Facebook has been taking down information regarding COVID and the vaccine injuries and even the origins of COVID. Now, according to emails obtained by the House Judiciary Committee, Facebook executives did so because they were persuaded. Facebook President of Global Affairs, Nick Clegg, inquired in an email back in July of 21, said, "Can someone quickly remind me why we are removing rather than demoting, labeling claims that COVID is man-made?" The response, it came from one of the Facebook vice presidents responsible for content, said, "We were under pressure from the administration and others to do more." He said we shouldn't have done it. Now, a lot of people are looking at this going, see, this is just another example of the Biden administration, its censorship program, its Pravda-like control over news, any one of a list of things. But I have an interesting question. Mr. Clegg, then president of global affairs for Facebook, why was that allowed to stand? Why did you allow such censorship to take place on your platform? Because the presidential administration was illegally pressuring you. Yes, illegally. What they were doing was a violation of the First Amendment. You actually had a claim. You actually had a claim for a lawsuit. You had a claim for a criminal charge against whoever in the administration was trying to suppress the freedom of speech, both of you and both of the owners of Facebook and the people posting on Facebook. That to me is a disturbing trend. people that at one time would have said, no, we won't follow this fascist idea that the government gets to pressure, gets to determine what is and is not available to the public. I wonder, when Mr. Zuckerberg was in college, when Mr. Klieg was in college, I'm assuming he was in college, was he promoting free speech? Now, he's complicit, along with others at the executive level of Facebook, in the censorship of information, not because it was factually incorrect, but simply because it was politically inconvenient. According to the Wall Street Journal, the conversation among Facebook's executive happened just 3 months after Meta, the Facebook's parent company, lifted the prohibition on posts claiming COVID-19 was man-made. So in other words, originally Facebook, they would censor posts that said that claimed that COVID-19 was man-made. But because of the growing debate, and I would say growing evidence that COVID-19 readily could have been man-made, Facebook lifted that prohibition, only to be pressured to reinstate it by the tyrant in chief. Biden also condemned so-called misinformation on social media, saying that vaccine skeptics were killing people. Excuse me, sir, where's your evidence? Where's your proof? Where's your proof that the vaccines are even safe? Oh, the CDC said so? The FDA said so? Where's their data? Where's their proof? There isn't any. Then everyone ran safety. The safety testing they ran was, medical malpractice. The only way I can describe it. You take a handful of people, you start a placebo test, and then immediately you vaccinate your control group, delegitimizing anything you find in that test. And that is used to say, oh, by the way, yes, this stuff is safe. So as much as I despise those in the White House that are censoring information, I loathe those at Meta, at Twitter, at YouTube, at you name it, at the corporate media, at the cable media, at any online media that allowed their judgment to be manipulated by the administration to censor information that has been shown to be done for political reasons. And of course, the corporate media was in on it. There's an interesting report about how the New York Times claims it was played by quote-unquote COVID experts. You look at the papers, the New York Times, the old gray lady, supposedly the pinnacle of journalism in the United States. There are emails that show that one of the top scientific experts were being told to trust without question the words of, well, let's just say somebody who should not have been trusted. And now the New York Times says, well, geez, we got snookered. It wasn't our fault. It's your job to be skeptical. It's your job not to trust experts. It's your job to investigate. If anything, the people that got played were the readers of the New York Times, who believed them when they said that the proximal origins report was actual scientific data, and not scientists scheming to manipulate the coverage of the news. Who got played? It wasn't the New York Times, ladies and gentlemen. If the New York Times had been doing their job, that's one thing. They took this hook, line, and sinker. I believe because either they wanted it to, but whatever the reason, they didn't do their job. And the American people that trusted them are the ones that got snookered. I have to take a break. Before I go, though, you know, I'm hoping you head to the website, constitutionstudy.com. I've got a lot going on over there. Of course, you can always ask a question. I'm going to do some questions tomorrow. Tomorrow's program, we're going to be dealing with a couple of questions that were asked. You can ask a question. Just go to constitutionstudy.com, click the Ask a Question button, fill in the form, hit the checkbox that says, please answer on America Out Loud Talk Radio, and I'll be more than happy to do that. I love answering questions. It gives me a clue about what is important in your mind. What are you thinking about? And gives me a chance to hopefully answer some questions that maybe have been floating around that people haven't been able to get a good answer to, or at least an answer that they can understand and use. Now, of course, the Patriots program, I'm a little behind getting that set up, and I apologize. I had some family issues come up that really took a lot of my time recently, so I'm a bit behind, but I'm still working on it. Hopefully, we'll have it soon. The boot camp will be available. The boot camp, by the way, will be free, and it's a recording of a one-hour boot camp I did right here near, right one town down from me. We had a great time, and I think you'll enjoy it. But the Patriots program is there to help whatever it is you're doing, whatever issue is your trigger issue that you're working towards, is to help give you tools to do better, to have a good education, a good constitutional foundation to make your arguments, to have the communication to get information that you need, and then find people that will work with you to be active in the environment. And again, you can find that all at constitutionstudy.com/patriots. Now, another thing is, I don't know about you, I get to the end of the day sometimes and I just go all fuzzy. The mind just wanders. It's hard to focus. And I've tried everything. I've tried the energy shots, the energy drinks, caffeine and sugar, and I get a buzz and then I crash. I've tried a couple supplements and they've worked pretty well. But the one I'm using now, it helps me boost my short-term focus and my long-term brain power. And I'll do it all with Healthy Cells Focus and Recall Vitamins. Yes, just vitamins. No caffeine, no sugar rush. You can find it all at AmericaOutloud.shop. It's AmericaOutloud.shop. Find the Healthy Cell card, click on it. The instructions are there. Basically, what you have to do is go to HealthyCell.com and put the card together and use your code OUTLOUD at checkout. Do me a favor, go to HealthyCell.com. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop, get your instructions, go on to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together, try all of their great products, any ones you find interesting, but use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud, and as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body, and now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
For 25 years, Global Healing has proudly produced the highest quality supplements and cleansing programs that are rooted in nature and backed by science. Get 15% off all of our products using code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, and we're looking at all the ugly forms of censorship. You know, even when stories come out to the good, there's still that ugly part of censorship underneath it. Take, for example, the situation with Southern Illinois University Edwardsville and Maggie DeJong. Now, Ms. DeJong was a student there, and I believe she was a student. She openly defended Kyle Rittenhouse on social media and cited critiques of critical race theory and individual criticisms of her students. Now, if you don't remember, Kyle Rittenhouse was the young man who, he went to, I forget, it was Minneapolis. He went to a town to help defend some of the businesses. He was attacked and in self-defense killed a gentleman. I believe he killed a gentleman. I'm losing track now. There's so many of these stories. But he was found not guilty. And of course, people went absolutely nuts. Well, Ms. DeJong, she defended him. Said, listen, he was in fear for his life. He went to help other people. He was in fear for his life. And he defended himself. Now, that, and along with, you know, critiques about CRT and the racism and her fellow students, the university wasn't happy. The university issued three what they call no contact orders. In other words, she was not allowed to communicate directly or indirectly with three students who alleged that her political views equated to harassment and discrimination. Well, she sued. She was represented by Alliance Defending Freedom, pretty good organization from what I've seen, and revealed that her defense of Kyle Rittenhouse and her opposition to critical race theory led to specific university sanctions, preventing her from participating in fully in class debates. Now, it's interesting, her classmates were encouraged by the university to, quote, raise the alarm over other harmful rhetoric. The ADF pointed out that the university's directives were implemented without providing Ms. DeJong the opportunity to defend herself. There was no due process. Now, the university has since acquiesced and amended its policies to provide procedural and substantive protections against these no-contact orders. Also part of the settlement of the lawsuit, SIUE, the Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville, paid $80,000, and three of their professors are required to take First Amendment training. The idea of training and the requirements to protect free speech. Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, this is good news. This young woman defended her rights. She spoke her mind. She, when she was punished by the school, she took them to court. She got the outcome that, well, I hope it's the one she was looking for. But I want you to stop and think about this for a second. So yes, you've got the modified policies. Good. You have the $80,000 fine. Fine. I hope that ADF gets money so that they can help defend other people. You've got three professors that are undergoing free speech training. All this is good. Here's the question. What did it cost? In other words, how long, I don't remember exactly when all this started, but how long was Ms. DeJong denied her rights? How long was she censored for her opinion before she got a redress of her grievance? See, she's never going to get those years back. She's never going to get those opportunities back. Time travels in a singular direction. There is a cost that she will never be able to recoup. I'm happy for the outcome. That's fine. But really, we should be defending freedom of speech and freedom of the press much more vigorously in my viewpoint. Yes, she went to court. She got a redress. I appreciate that. What about everybody else? You know, you've got, what, apparently 3 students that were so terrified to be exposed to something they disagreed with that they got the university issue no contact order, effectively the a university version of a restraining order, because her ideas were, well, the harassment to express an idea contrary to mine. Do you see the censorship? Yes, you had the university punishing DeJong. You also had at least three students censoring Ms. DeJong, not debating her, not providing evidence that she's wrong. They simply wanted to shut her down. They didn't want to hear it. They probably, and I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't want it communicated, period. See, it's not just the government that censors. It's not just the universities that are censoring. Here we have students, professors, and others censoring information that they don't like. Not saying you're wrong and here's my proof. See, I have a lot of people that say things that I don't like. My response, generally, and I hope it's every time, but I have to give myself the fact that I'm human. My response is, show me their proof. Here's my proof that I'm right. Here's my evidence that this is the case. Where's yours? See, that's the way freedom of speech and freedom of the press are supposed to work. Freedom of expression. The idea of being able to express ideas. And the ideas, hopefully the ideas, with the most evidence of their rightness, are the ones that prevail. That's not what the censorship class wants. They don't want it heard. The students didn't want this heard. The faculty didn't want this heard. The university didn't want this heard. And even though they were sued and well, she, you know, Ms. DeJong got some redress for her grievance. And again, I'm happy about that. What does it say about our society? What does it say about the American people that our response to information we don't like is to censor it? If we're the land of the free, how is it we cannot allow others to freely express ideas we disagree with? If we are the home of the brave, how is it we're not brave enough to stand up and support our positions with facts and data and evidence? But we need some government bully, some university bully to protect us from ideas we don't like. Because while Ms. DeJong got the answer in court that she wanted, that's not always going to be the case. We'll take, there's a case out of the Fourth Circuit involving a North Carolina State professor. Now, this professor, Stephen Porter, objected to what he considered the lower standards used by his school when hiring minority faculty. Basically saying, you know, there's a lower set of standards for the minority faculty. Now, the school declared that such viewpoints were, well, they're not collegial enough, and they retaliated. Well, he sued, and a divided panel at the Fourth Circuit decided that this speech was not protected by the First Amendment. Now, guess what? At that point, they were correct. Right? The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. Congress was not involved in this. This cannot be, I repeat, it cannot be a First Amendment issue. This is, however, a 14th Amendment issue. Why? Well, because you have unequal protection under the law. North Carolina State is a state university, meaning it falls under the auspices of a government entity. If you are going to punish people for different viewpoints differently, that's unequal protection under the law. It's also depriving Professor Porter, of the liberty of his free speech, the property he has in his rights, without due process of law. Now, I am not familiar with the entire history of this case, but my first question is, why was it automatically a federal issue? Was it the assumption that it's the First Amendment? Because everything, freedom of speech, has to be First Amendment, even though that's not what the Constitution says. Could it be this actually was a violation? In fact, I know it was a violation of the North Carolina Constitution. I don't remember which article and clause, but I know they have a free speech clause in there. And to be punished for expressing an idea by a government entity, well, that's a violation of the North Carolina Constitution. Did they even go to Carolina state courts, North Carolina? I mean, just look at it this way. I was talking about both the affirmative action cases and the freedom of religion case, the U.S. Postal Service case. The problem we have is so often these suits are based on such a misinterpretation of the Constitution, a failure to read the plain language of the Constitution, that it opens up to a judge's opinion. And here we have a judge's opinion that says, no, this is not a freedom of speech issue. And again, they said it was not a First Amendment issue, which is not. But I'm going to come back to the question of, is it an equal protection issue? Is it a due process issue? Because according to Judge Richardson, who wrote the dissent, he said, Porter published his blog post in September. Pasque suggested that he leave his program area at the October faculty meeting and formally threatened to remove him in her November newsletter. Finally, she followed through on her threat in July when she gave Porter his annual evaluation. Ladies and gentlemen, that's an equal protection. She's not happy with what he said and retaliated. It's a freedom, it's a state issue for freedom of speech. It's not a First Amendment issue. But we're still dealing, if we're looking at it from a censorship standpoint, yeah, it's still a censorship question. It's the school censoring ideas that they don't like. They didn't like someone saying, you're placing your thumb on the scale, you're setting lower standards for certain groups, that's wrong, and anybody who criticizes it gets punished, because it's a lot easier to simply silence dissent than actually argue against a dissent. So here we have two freedom of speech issues involving two separate colleges or universities. And we have two separate decisions for two very different reasons. But we're all dealing with the fact that universities, and in many cases here you have faculty, administration, and universities censored information they did not like. Whether it was Ms. DeJong and being censored for pointing out how Kyle Rittenhouse is being treated, the racism of CRT and other things, or a professor saying, hey, you've lowered the standards for minorities, that's wrong. This is information. This is information that people inside saw and wanted to express. And they were censored. And while one came to an outcome that we like and one came to an outcome we didn't like, the point is both of these involved censorship at both a organizational level, the school level, and a personal level, an individual level. Whether it was the students that asked for no contact orders, or the administrator that wanted to get rid of this pesky professor that pointed out our own racism. We're still dealing with the ugliness of censorship. And the outcome of that is dangerous. If you're not allowed to disagree, how do you ever find out when you're wrong? If you never listen to somebody who disagrees with you, how do you ever find out when you're wrong? The answer is, you don't. you continue in mistakes and error because you cannot allow yourself to be exposed to information that contradicts your religious viewpoint. And yes, I said religious viewpoint, because now it's a matter, it's an article of faith that this is true, not an article of fact. That bothers me. That bothers me that me, who came from a generation that says, I may vehemently disagree with what you had to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it, to now be in a century, in a time when not only will I not defend your right to say it, I won't die for it. I won't defend it. In fact, I will do the exact opposite. I will punish you for saying something that I disagree with. Now, here at the Constitution Study, I listen to contending points of view. I listen to alternate points of view. I listen when people argue with me for the simple reason of I'm not arrogant enough to believe that I can never be wrong. Now, frequently these arguments are emotional or they're devoid of facts and data, but at least listen to them. Because sometimes they do bring facts and data, and they challenge my assertions. And I either find out if I'm right or wrong by evaluating it. In either case, I'm stronger. Which is why one of the places I go every day for news and information is AmericaOutloud.news. It's part of my regular news feed. But it's more important than ever that we share this information. That these stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, all these examples of differing viewpoints, differing information, that we share them. Fight against censorship by exercising freedom of speech and freedom of the press. See, if you wish to live with the blessings of liberty, you have to exercise them. And that includes sharing information that may disagree with you, that may disagree with your friends and neighbors, but is that struggle to find the truth, that exposure to alternate ideas, that helps, that is what's the foundation of those blessings of liberty.
We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. AmericaOutloud.news. Delivering a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. Here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. Join us in the fight for liberty and justice for all. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Cofix RX Nasal Solution has completed the circle and is now offering throat spray with povidone iodine. That completes the protocol doctors like Peter McCullough recommend. If staying healthy is important, you'll want to make sure to add throat spray to your next order of Cofix RX. For a limited time and exclusive for America Out Loud listeners only, you can save 25% off your entire order. Let's double down against colds, flus, strep, RSV, HRV, COVID, and more. Click the banner or go to America Out Loud shop to get 25% off your entire order. Use coupon code OUTLOUD25. That's coupon code OUTLOUD25.
We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. AmericaOutloud.news. Delivering a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. Here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. Join us in the fight for liberty and justice for all. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoin the Constitution Study. Today, we're looking at the ugly forms of censorship. Now, there's something that's not technically censorship, but it's when officials that work for the people, that are supposed to serve the people, when they hide information, not by preventing other people from speaking, but simply hiding information from us, not letting us know, what you almost would call a lie of omission. By now, you've all heard about the baggie of cocaine that was found in the White House. Hopefully, you've also heard about the Secret Service's less than forthcoming response as far as investigating and letting the people know what they found. I mean, first you had the ever-changing story of where the baggie was found. Then you had the scenario of, well, they couldn't figure out who it was actually, whose it was, because first there was no video surveillance, and there were too many people, and then there's questions about prints. And of course, with all the current mistrust of federal law enforcement, deservedly just, I mean, they've earned this lack of trust. Now we're seeing that the Secret Service is continuing to not provide information. Apparently, according to Lauren Boebert, the Secret Service has a list of about 500 potential people on a list, none of which they will actually. I could understand to a certain point not releasing names of people, because assumedly 499 of those 500 people are innocent. But with all the surveillance that we have to live with, it's a little suspect that the Secret Service still can't figure out who that cocaine belonged to, who left it in the White House. Then again, this is kind of becoming an ongoing thing, right? When certain stories are inconvenient, like the fact that the FBI can't figure out who left the pipe bombs on January 6th at the DNC and RNC headquarters in D.C. They can track down a grandma who was on the Capitol, but they can't figure out who left the bomb. And again, now you're getting into issues of trust. Now, there's the American people. Do we trust that the Secret Service doesn't know who who was the owner of that cocaine? Who left it in the White House? Or could it be that the Secret Service is being prevented from actually investigating this crime? I mean, let's face it, either the person was visiting the White House, or they were a member of the family or the true inner circle of the administration. Now, you may have heard of Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Center, and he described what you have to go through as a visitor to enter the White House. He says, one of the things you have to do when you go through the security checkpoints, and keep in mind, every staff member, every visitor has to go through a background check investigation to get into the White House. They not only check you for weapons, you have to go through an area where they blow air through you and they have dog sniffing to try to detect any kind of illegal substance, bombs, or anything else. Now, the question then becomes, did they miss the cocaine when it entered the White House? Or, as I understand from people who have been in the Secret Service, there are certain members of the family that don't go through those security checkpoints. Could it be there was a member of the family, part of the inner circle? And could that be the reason why? Again, we don't know for sure. It's speculation. But as we are denied information that would be let's say pertinent to an investigation, especially with the history of cover-ups from federal law enforcement, we have to wonder, you know, do we trust that federal law enforcement is handling this situation properly, justly? And if they're not, is it the Secret Service is doing it, or are they getting influence? Are they being influenced by outside forces? Say, oh, the member, the administration, the Secretary of Treasury, any of those. And of course, there's another form of censorship that we need to deal with. And that's what I refer to as, well, the current version of it is debanking. We saw this, again, under the Obama administration, where he encouraged financial institutions not to do business with certain industries that were found in his mind to be politically unfavorable or face potential investigation and regulatory messes. So we've seen this debanking, this deplatforming on social media. We're also seeing it now in the banks, where banks, especially the large corporate banks, are looking at certain individuals and shutting down their accounts. Now, listen, banks are private institutions. They have a right to set standards for people they do business with. So I'm less concerned about a bank that says, we're not going to do business with gun manufacturers or pharmaceuticals or, for that matter, you know, universities. It's one thing to have a published policy. It's when high-profile individuals are getting caught up in this mess. For example, Nigel Farage and Joseph Mercola both had their bank accounts shut down by, Farage was NatWest and Mercola was by J.P. Morgan Chase. And by the way, he's not alone. General Flynn and his wife and editor-in-chief of Uncovered, Tracy Beans, they were all deplatformed by different platforms. And of course, you got PayPal's been doing this as well. Now, I line this up under censorship because it is basically a punishment for expressing a point of view. It's just the way the Obama administration did not like gun manufacturers, gun stores. They didn't want them to be able to do business. They made it harder for them to get banking, to work in the banking industry, to get support from banks. Now it's being done at a private level. And I have to wonder, are these decisions being made by the banks or are they too being influenced by the administration? You know, rather like the social media platforms have been influenced by the administration, rather the way the banks were influenced by the Obama administration. See, if the idea of you can hold an unpopular point of view, but we're gonna remove you from polite society, then you're effectively being, it's censorship in another form. I mean, you know, like I said, I was removed from Facebook. But when it comes to the banks, I haven't had any issues. But you know what? I make sure I use multiple banks, and I'm certainly leaning much more towards small local banks than large national banks, because it seems the large national banks that are acting this way. And I wonder, is the pressure from the administration, is the pressure from different political groups, or is it this DEI censorship nonsense that's being used to pressure them into damaging their customers? And then there's a high school coach, a David Block. He was fired after he expressed his opinion to two of his team members. He coaches snowboarding. And he told two of his team members back in February that males have a distinct physical advantage due to their bodies being different. It gave them an unfair advantage over females. He was fired. Now, he was a coach for 10 years at Woodstock Union High School in Vermont, but he was fired because he expressed an idea, though factually correct, was politically incorrect. It was politically inconvenient. And for that, he was fired by a public school, a government school. It's just, again, it's another form of censorship. And to me, it's an ugly form of censorship. It's kind of a backhanded way, an ugly way of doing it. But probably one of the ugliest forms, or I should say the ugliest outcomes of censorship is not simply the ideas that are suppressed, but it's the ideas that are often promoted in their place. For example, out in California, commie for me, as I like to call it, there was legislation proposed that was designed to strengthen the penalties for child sex traffickers. Now, I haven't read the legislation. I don't know all that's in the legislation, but the purpose, and of course, if you want, you know, just because it's stated purpose doesn't mean it's actually what it does, but the purpose was to strengthen penalties for child sex traffickers. If I understand correctly, the only people in prison treated worse than cops are child molesters. So, I mean, child sex traffickers, they're right up there. Well, the California Assembly's Public Safety Committee, they rejected that proposal. And they got a firestorm. They heard from California legislators, from the citizens. They heard, they got such an earful, they decided that maybe we should reconsider this idea of not strengthening penalties for child sex traffickers. Why is this important? Let's think about this. California is at the forefront of not only this transgender agenda, but the sexualization of our children. Exposing them to sexualizers they're not mentally or emotionally prepared to deal with. Introducing them to demonstrations, to books that teach them how to perform different sex acts as young as 5, 6, 7 years old. Ladies and gentlemen, that's pedophilia. That's child pornography. How close is it from that to taking children to be sexualized and sexually abused? It's, in my mind, very, very close. But what's interesting is the only reason those on the Public Safety Committee can reconsider their decision was because the people and the other legislatures, they got mad, and they let them, those on the Public Safety Committee, know that they were mad. In other words, the bad idea that's being promoted in California was impacting this decision, I believe, on the penalty for child sex trafficking. But there were still people in California willing to stand up and say, this is wrong. Imagine what would have happened if the people of California had allowed themselves to be censored because they were called transphobes or homophobes or phobophobes. Just imagine. Now, I'm not saying that suddenly child sex trafficking would be legal in California. But we have to think, with the information that's being suppressed, what is the information being promoted? Again, freedom of expression, whether it's thought, speech, press, internet, it is so critical to a free society. It's not simply that your ability to speak an idea, to present an idea, but the ability of people to be allowed to hear it. I'm not saying forced to hear it. I'm being allowed to hear it. See, freedom of speech is not simply your ability to speak. They could simply put you, say, here, you want your freedom of speech? Go into a soundproof room and speak all you want. No one will hear you. It's not freedom of speech, ladies and gentlemen. It's the ability of people who wish to be able to hear. So to paraphrase Benjamin Franklin writing A Silence Do Good, if we can't have freedom of speech, there can be no such thing as public liberty. If the government gets to decide what you're allowed to speak, the ideas you're allowed to express, if people get to decide what is allowed to be expressed, if all it takes is a loud enough group to shut you down because they don't like what you're saying, liberty is dead. But without freedom of speech, you also don't have freedom of thought. Without freedom of thought, there's no such thing as wisdom. I think America's lost a lot of its wisdom because we refuse to listen. We shut down, we censor the wisdom that we don't, that certain groups don't want to hear. It is the worst form of democracy, ladies and gentlemen. I know democracy is supposed to be a good thing. It is not. The true definition of a democracy, a majority rule, a mob rule, is what leads to this. It says your rights can be infringed by, your freedom of speech can be denied if we can get a majority of people to agree that you're not allowed to say such things. Censorship is the tool of the mob. Whether that mob be a criminal organization, a governmental organization, or just some political movement. And if we allow the mob to win, then liberty and justice for all ceases to exist in this once great country. Now, as I exercise my freedom of speech right here on America Out Loud Talk Radio, I hope you will exercise your freedom to listen, to be exposed to ideas that may challenge your preconceived notions, hopefully give them a fair hearing, look at the evidence, see if there's foundation for what is being said, and then decide for yourself. While you're at it, maybe bring a few friends to join us here every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen to us on America Out Loud, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't join us then, by all means, join the podcast. All these episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on talk radio, and you can listen on your favorite podcast app. But I ask you to subscribe to the show. Leave the show and the episodes ratings and reviews. It helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. And you can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.news. But as always, I want you to share them. You know, I talk about the Constitution Study about being about returning the Constitution to everyday Americans, to we the people. That comes from sharing this information. When you help, when you share the links and you share the episodes and share the stories, you help share the blessings of liberty.